have my monster coffee with me.
Oh.
As always.
Monster coffee?
Yeah. Do they have those over there? Because I
I'm
don't
not
think...
sure.
I know they don't have them in Canada. Because I was talking to a friend of mine. And he's like, I've never heard of monster coffee. It goes hard. Yeah, it's like a...
I mean, I feel like it's probably in some dodgy shop because we have like a weird mix of things here in Ireland. So, I mean, it's probably there somewhere.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, because, I don't know, I remember years ago I tried a monster coffee and I was like, oh, that's surprisingly good. Like, you know, it was like a frappuccino. But so the convenience store that's right by my house, I went to it and there was like two left and I was like, oh, I'll try it again. And it was really good. So then I got another one today. And this is the last one I'm going to have forever because they don't get stock in ever. Like, I used to work
Oh,
there.
no.
They don't get fucking monster stuff. Whatever. Pain in the ass, but we're recording, so I can go at any point now.
Okay,
hold on.
That should just be the intro, us discussing monster coffee. I feel like our demographic would appreciate it.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I think that we are going to leave that in because that's a good idea, Alex. Monster Coffee, that's our sponsor for the day. How are you guys doing? As I said, I'm Dylan Murray. That's Alex Richards. Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi, I'm Alex from Last Word on Pro Wrestling and Voices of Wrestling. Please don't hate me. I just talk about how great Joshi is. I'm not Joe Lanza.
Yeah, we're both Joshi aficionados. And we love this great sport, professional wrestling. We apologize that we're probably a few days late. Usually it comes out like every 3 weeks or so. But I was overexcited about doing a FMW special. You know, Frontier Wrestling with Onita and all of those great people. You know, Megumi Kudo, Kaima Toyota. But I didn't realize that there are basically no tapes from 1990s FMW. Except for... the 1 year anniversary, which isn't until November. So please anticipate in October or November an FMW special. If you don't like that idea, please yell at me on Twitter and I won't do it. But you know, it's FMW. Of course you're gonna like it. Since we have a bit lighter of a card today, we have one AJW classic episode and we don't have any JWP or, like I said, any FMW, we asked for questions on Twitter at VTG Pod. You can ask us questions whenever, truly, because we don't really have much else to do except for talk about Joshi Wrestling. So ask us more questions about Joshi Wrestling. Today, we only got one question. It was about Jumbo Miyamoto, a Joshi legend from the 70s, I believe, Alex. I know you know a bit more about this than I do. So if you'd like to elaborate on who that was and what she did.
Yeah, so Jumbo actually, she debuted back for the All Japan Women's Pro Wrestling Association, which was designed to be like this umbrella promotion that would control all of the women's groups. But the Matsunaga brothers, who founded AJW, they had a falling out with the rest of the people in the association and then founded AJW. So she, who allegedly was the cousin of the Matsunaga brothers, jumped to AJW with them. And she went on to become like a big star for their first couple of years, like the early 70s, late 60s. She won 25 tag team championships while she was there. She was a 5-time Triple WA champion. She was basically just like one of the biggest names in the company, which is kind of weird given she was like quite short and stocky. Given what we know about AJW, they pushed like tall, you know, pop stars and shit. So like pushing her as hard as they did was kind of strange. But basically, like, yeah, they used her then to put over Mac Fumiaki, who was meant to be their big star. She was, like, 16 when she won the belt. She was, like, a pop star. She was going to be, like, this big star for AJW. But Mac only lasted a year. And then Jumbo was there to put over the beauty pair, obviously Jackie Sato and Maki Ueda, who would go on to become kind of the first two huge stars for AJW.
Dope. You know, when you mentioned how she was trying to pass the torch to the 16-year-old who didn't last long, it reminded me, even though this is a classic Joshi podcast, I wanted to give a big shout out to my favorite current wrestler, Azumi, who won her first belt. She's only 17. She's the GOAT. She's just great. I'm very happy for her. me and Alex might have a thing to talk about Stardom at some point, maybe. I don't want to spoil anything, even though I just did.
Ooh, I didn't even know about this.
But yeah, shout out to Izumi because she's great, and she obviously lasted longer than the chick who was trying to take Jumbo's spot. So, I mean, Rossi, push her to the.
Yeah. I mean, Azumi's cool. She would have kicked ass in AJW. Like, imagine her and like Jaguar Yokota just flying around the ring. Would have been cool as shit.
She would. I feel like she can kick people's asses. Like if she wanted to, like she could hurt people. But
She showed in that like Momo Watanabe match in the GP last year that like if you try and go strikes with her, she will kick you very hard.
Momo and Izumi, they go hard. But back to 30+ years ago, because that's what we do here. Yeah. So Jumbo Miyamoto, AJW legend. I personally don't watch a lot of wrestling pre like 85, maybe, like just in general, like even Western stuff. It's like I don't really go that deep further back just because I just haven't really gotten the chance to. I know Alex, you're like you're an actual historian where it's like you actually like go into the stuff. So I left it to you because I feel like that's more of a you type of question. But yeah, Jumbo
Fair.
Miyamoto sounds like a pretty dope wrestler. Short and stocky are pretty dope most of the time, like as wrestlers, like a Tomohiro Ishii, Saito, all of those other people. I don't know if that those were the first people that came to mind. But yeah, they're great wrestlers, and I'm sure if you can find some Jumbo tapes, I'm sure she would impress you as well. So I believe we can just jump into the AJW Classics episode. It's episode 41, which was Survival Shout in Korakuen Hall. It took place in August of 1990, and it was very well known for the fracture of Gokumanto. The main event, of course, we'll get to that later, but it was Jungle Jack versus the Grizzly One, Grizzly Iwamoto, and Bull Nakano. First time Bull Nakano and Aja Kong's ever met inside the ring, I believe, unless it was like a tournament match. But I'm pretty sure this was the first time ever. And so that's what this show is very well known for. The AJW Classics episode only had a few of the matches, but I looked it up. And there was a few prelim matches that didn't make tape. Like there was a Kyoko Inoue tag team match, there was a Kyoro Ito, singles match in the beginning. But what interested me was in the third match of the night, there were four male rookies in a tag team match. AJW doesn't do a lot of male wrestling. So I was like, huh, I wonder who these people were. Their names were Cooley SZ, Bulldog KT as a tag team against Masa Michinoku and Monkey Magic Wakita. And you don't know those names, but you will know what their actual names would go on to be, as it was Jado Geto versus the Great Sasuke and Super Delphin. They were all within a year
What?
of their debut.
What
They
the
had an
fuck?
AJW match, which I don't know. Like it's it I it genuinely didn't make tape because like there's no known like who won. Like no one knows who won the matches.
Okay.
But that's just ins like Jado Geto, bro.
How long have those two been around? And they're still like wrestling, creaking around New Japan rings, like.
Unfortunately, they are, yes. But in 1989, they both debuted like within like a couple months of each other, and they as Coolio SZ and Bulldog KT, wonderful names, both made their first and only AJW appearance in the third match of the night. And I kind of feel bad for Kyoro Ito because Jado Geto were like good for like 4 years, and it wasn't until like 1999. So I imagine them as rookies were a bit rough. Well, I mean, they have Great Sasuke to lean on, but he was the youngest one. He started wrestling like 3 months earlier. It's just insane. Like it's just I don't know what else to talk. Like it's just I'm dumbfounded by that because it's like I was just like I was like, oh, I wonder what the other matches were on Survival Shout. And I was like, who the hell are these four jabronis? And I was like, oh, Bullet Club versus the Great Sasuke. But
that's
was
so
pretty
random,
cool.
though, isn't it? Like, that isn't it, though, the same with like Big Egg? It's meant to be this like Joshi super show, but then there's like midget wrestling and shit on it.
Yeah, like I was writing a thing that like and I was started talking about Big Egg, and I was like, it's the biggest all female show of all time. But then I was like, it's not all female, so I can't really say that, even though like it's predominantly female. But like I it you know like the verbiage, because it's like, yeah, they had midget wrestlers, they had like a sideshow jobbers from other companies just like hanging out, and it's kind of weird. But yeah, like it's just wild that AJW just did that sometimes, and it was very random when they did, like most shows don't have Jado and Geto versus the Great Sasuke and Super Delphin. But
I suppose it's like, do you remember in like early 2000s when New Japan had like these occasional women's matches and they had like China wrestling Jushin Liger and shit? It kind of reminds me of that where there's just people randomly there for whatever reason.
yeah, I mean, I think that's the best way to like to assess it, because I don't know why else they would have rookie Jado Geto versus rookie Sasuke and rookie, like, that's just fucking insane. I'm sorry, I'm probably rambling way too much about this, but it's, considering we didn't even watch it, but it's just weird to me, and it's hilarious. But let's get into the actual show that we watched. The first match was your favorite, a kickboxing match between Mima Shimoda and Yumika Hoda. And this match was really something, wasn't it, Alex?
I mean, it was a match that happened. I'm glad though they cut it because apparently this went like six rounds or something. But we only saw maybe like 5 minutes. Because if you showed me six rounds of this, I might quit. Like, honestly.
Yeah, I that's kind of confusing, honestly, because it's like it felt like it was pretty, like, I didn't feel like any cut was like very drastic. I thought that it was just two rounds and Hoda beat her ass, honestly, because that's what I assumed happened.
Of course you did. Of course, you just assume Hoda beats ass all the time.
Well, yeah, but I also noticed that in Shimoda's corner was Toshio Yamada, another one of our favorites. I had found out in between episodes that during this time she was considered retired, like she wasn't, like there wasn't a plan for her to come back at this point. So, if she had just stayed retired, we would have lost out on so much in the future. But I just found that sort of weird. Like, I don't know if you knew that, but like, during these like 8 to 12 months that she's injured, because we saw her get injured earlier in the year, during these months, she was like considered like just not a wrestler anymore. And that sort of surprised me, because it's like she is so integral to like the rest of the 90s. You know what I mean?
Like she goes on to be like a big thing. I wonder if though that's like what AJW did because they had so many wrestlers that they were just like, oh, if you're injured for the long term, we don't need you anymore. Because didn't they do the same with Debbie Malenko? She like broke her leg or something and then she just never wrestled with them again. Because I mean, they had hundreds of people trying to get onto cards.
Yeah, that's true. Joshi is shady, man.
Oh,
Like, just,
AJW is crazy.
yeah,
I've
like,
read an interview where Bull was like, yeah, when you're a new wrestler, you're like not even a human. So like they told me to cut my hair and I did it, otherwise I'd have never had a career. And I was like, that's like emotional abuse. Like, oh my God.
I know, and it's like, it to a certain degree, it's still, I mean, it's not the same, obviously, but there's still elements of that nowadays, and it's just weird how like I don't know how it's very intense, but it's also very graceful. So it's like, to think about it, like Joshi Wrestling is extremely, like, it's one of the most corrupt brands of wrestling. It sort of sucks to think about it like that, but when you look at it, it just kind of is. And it's just not even weird, just like sort of like, damn, like that's my entire takeaway. It's just damn.
Yeah, no,
But
it's not great, but I mean, I think all of wrestling has been revealed to be pretty bad, so I can't really judge too harsh.
yeah, that's pretty true. Back to the wonderful
Back to
kickboxing
the
match.
match.
Yeah, I feel like we've been digressing this entire time, but Hoda, at a certain point, you could just tell that Hoda is no longer putting up with bullshit, and she just starts hurting Shimoda. Like, that's it. Like, she starts, like, getting after her. And at one point, like, it was really, Yumika Hoda is a good kicking wrestler, but this wasn't a wrestling match, so she was not good. But she was better than Mima Shimoda, so there's that. And basically, she knocked down Shimoda at one point, and Shimoda's face is completely fucked up. And Shimoda starts getting back up, and Yumika Hoda just kicks her leg, and she falls back to the ground just to be an asshole. And yeah, so Hoda eventually wins, I assume by ref stoppage, but considering it apparently went 6 rounds, maybe she has won by decision and it like cut looked weird, but I assumed it was by ref decision because Shimoda did not look okay. And after the match, Shimoda went after Hoda, which was not a good idea because she got her shit rocked again. Like, I don't know what you were going for there, honey. But yeah, Hoda wins this match. Class of 85 taking no losses this far. Let's see how that continues, considering three of the four matches on this card included Class of 85 wrestlers. Of course, that being Yumika Hoda, Tsuko Nishiwake, Suzuka Minami, and Akira Hokuto. Next up is Nishiwake and Suzuka Minami, and it's against Medusa and Norio Tateno.
Good old Kyo Tatano.
Huh?
Good old Kyo
Fuck
Tatano.
you. Fuck you. Come on. I thought I messed something up and then come on. No, but yeah, so to say that I wasn't particularly interested in this match going into it would be kind of an understatement because everybody knows that we are not the biggest Medusa fans, and Norio Tateno is Norio Tateno in 1990, so she's not very like but this match was different. I'm not sure what it was, but Tateno was very on her game, and it seemed like it was like a big match for her. I looked it up. It wasn't like her anniversary or anything. It wasn't her birthday. Like, it was, she just was like, you know what? I'm a show that I'm a bad bitch, and she did. She did very, very well. Class of 85, they went pretty hard. It was pretty good throughout the opening. They tried to work on Medusa's leg, but Medusa is not that good of a seller. So I was very, very happy when she butt scooted her way across the ring to get away. And then they didn't work on her leg for the rest of the match, which is great because then she didn't have to sell and she just got to be Medusa. And the match got really chaotic. It was really pretty good. It was kind of all over the place, but as is life, AJW mid-card matches are often all over the place, but it was fun. At one point, Minami and Nishiwake went for four consecutive dives from the top rope, and every single one of them missed. Like, Nishiwake, went for two drop kicks. She went for one and then she missed. She went for another and then she hit Minami. And then she went for a crossbody. She hit Minami. And I'm just like, okay, can we just, I don't think that this is necessary anymore. Just hit her. Like, there's, like, it's not, you can't keep doing this when it keeps failing. But luckily for them, they didn't need a top rope move to take home the victory. Minami ended up victory rolling Medusa and got the win. I don't think that anything was bad about this match. I wouldn't say that it was great, but I thought it was enjoyable. Medusa didn't hurt anything specifically, except for like, the beginning where it's like she didn't really sell when her leg was being attacked, but whatever. And I feel like Tateno really was on her game. I didn't really mention it much, but she hit the knee strikes. She was really like going at a faster pace than she has been throughout the rest of these episodes. So I thought that she did pretty good. Again, I don't know if you know if there was any importance to this match or not, because it seemed like there was.
No, it didn't. It doesn't seem like it was an important match. Maybe it was just one of those where like Suzuka and Ishiwaki were like, we're teaming, but we're also rivals. Maybe there was that to it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt like there was something to it. Obviously, Nishiwake, only has a couple months left, and like there's that. But other than that, it just felt like there was something like a, there was like an importance to it, but not as
Maybe
important
it's
as the next one.
Corkin. I don't know. You know,
Yeah.
some wrestlers perform when they're in Corkin. I don't know if Tatna's last match when she wasn't very good was in Corkin as well, but I don't know.
Yeah, it was, because it was the Japan Grand Prix, and that was in
Oh,
Corkin.
yes. In fairness, we don't blame her for that, though. That was all Medusa.
Yeah, that was like, that was a lot of Medusa.
We really riff on Medusa. I like Alundra Blaze, but like she just was not very good in AJW.
She didn't have it yet. Yeah, like it's, and it's really, it really does suck, because I do love Alundra Blaze. I think that she's, one of, she's really great. But like at this point, it's just like it's really easy to see that it is not good when she's in the ring.
Yeah, I mean she's better than like the WWF ladies that used to get sent over when the Bomb Angels would go to WWF. Like those girls were atrocious, and they would like the AJW girls would work down to them. So whereas at least Medusa's like, you guys can work however you want. I'll try and keep up, but maybe won't. Though at least she's not like actively bad like that.
I agree. I think that she's, like I said, she was fine in this match. She was, she didn't really add a ton, but she didn't take away anything. So that, I think that she did fine. In fact, I think that her first opening burst was pretty good, except for, like little things like she, her ring awareness, she would like get caught up in the ropes and, just like tiny things like that. But I think that she did fine. Hopefully we don't have to riff on her too much, because again, I don't like doing this. I feel like I do it all the time, but it's just, it is how it is. Yeah, so that match was fine. Nothing amazing, but it was definitely enjoyable. The next two matches were fucking barn burners, though. I'm not even gonna lie.
Yeah. These kicked ass.
And with that being said, that's 2-0 for the class of 85. Shout out. So let's see how it continues. Minami Toyota versus Akira Hokuto, a rematch of the Japan Grand Prix. And this was a million times better than their Japan Grand Prix match. And their Japan Grand Prix match was pretty good. That's what I think. And I just said Japan Grand Prix so much, I can't even understand what the word means. But the match starts with one of like the best opening sequences I've seen in a long time. 'Cause basically, Hokuto's coming back. Like obviously she had a match last month, but it was like a, wasn't that big of a deal. It was just another Fire Jets versus Marine Wolves match. Well, not, it wasn't Fire Jets, it was Tateno and Hoda.
Oh,
But
yes.
today she, well, not today. In this match, she kind of went hard. Like, she refuses the handshake out the gate, and then Toyota just starts slapping the shit out of her. And then she pushes Toyota, and she starts slapping the shit out of her. And then they start suplexing each other, and they throw each other out of the ring, and they fucking pile drive each other on the fucking concrete. They start diving on, like they just went crazy in the first like 4 minutes, and it was great, man. After that, kind of calmed down for a second, and you can tell that, a big part of this match was Hokuto's knee and Minami Toyota like targeting the knee. And that was pretty interesting because, Toyota doesn't really do limb work at this point. She's pretty much all, like a fast paced, going for roll ups basically the entire time. So her doing limb work was like a new thing. She was pretty uncharacteristic in this match, and I thought that was pretty interesting. A little bit later on in the match, she got a headlock in, and she almost choked out Hokuto, which is not a sentence that you'll usually hear regarding Manami Toyota at this point in time. And it was nice seeing her work a different style, like not saying that she's not good at what she does, but it was just like an interesting change of pace. And by the end, Akira Hokuto was more of a heel, but during the early going, Akira Hokuto was more of the face because she had the knee injury. That's like, oh, well, whoever's targeting the injury is kind of a dick. So, Toyota kind of playing a heel, not really, but kind of was also pretty interesting to me. I don't know if you.
I don't even think it was her playing the heel. I think it was her like her established character is like she's younger than all of these women, but she's really good, so she wrestles them a lot, and so she just has to take anything she can get. But to me, it just felt like the younger wrestler going, right, there's a weakness here, and I'm gonna have to exploit it, otherwise I'm gonna get blitzed. So I'm not sure
Yeah.
I'd say she played heel. It was just kind of playing into the psychology of being more inexperienced.
That's true. It's also possible that like Minamoto's face just always looks upset. So like
Yeah,
her
she's got resting bitch face big time.
So it was very easy for me to just think, oh, she's kind of being a dick, but I think you're probably more right than I am in this case. Yeah, and near the end of the match, it started like the crowd was hot the entire time. And it was going pretty long, and I didn't mind it. Like I thought that it was like the length, it wasn't that bad. Like I think that they kept up very well. Near the end, Toyota, I don't know how I feel about this, 'cause she kicked out of a missile drop kick to the back of the head. Then she kicks out of the Northern Lights driver. Then she kicks out of a dragon suplex. Then she kicks out of another fucking drop kick. And then they go to a time limit draw. Have we seen Northern Lights driver at this point?
I don't think so, at least not as a finish.
Yeah, like I don't know. It's weird that she did it, and I was like, holy shit, she hit the Northern Lights driver, and then it got a two against a young Minami Toyota. Like
I
that
was
was
kind of
the reveal.
surprised, but I mean,
Yeah.
maybe I don't think it was her finish at the time, probably. Should make more
Yeah.
sense because I don't think they'd give Minami that much. I mean, I know she won the Grand Prix, but they're not just gonna go, right, you're gonna bury Akira here.
Yeah. But the thing is that like I up to this point she had been beating people mostly with the missile drop kick, and she hit two of them and she still kicked out. So at this point I'm like, okay, what is her move? 'Cause it's like she hit all of them. Like there's
Yeah.
nothing else that she's won with that she didn't hit here. Unless like a roll up, but that's not really like her go-to thing. She's just rolling people
Yeah,
up.
she doesn't really roll up, does she?
Yeah, she's done it in one of the matches, I think, and it was, not really even memorable, like as in like, oh, she does this roll up, she just got a roll up. So yeah, it was just weird. Like I don't know, maybe I read into things way too much all the time, but I'm just like, what? Like they really gave Toyota a lot. Like she looked really good. She took a lot of like big offense, and they went to a time limit draw. The crowd was hot for a time limit draw. This is before the time when people got infuriated because it was a time limit draw, and they just accepted it because draws happen. But after the match, Hokuto did get a lot of heat. I don't know what she said because it was all in Japanese, of course. But like the crowd was fucking mad at her. Like I don't know what the fuck she said, but they were not happy.
And if you slight Toyota, they will hate you. Like this crowd adores Minami Toyota. It's insane.
Yeah, and like I mean, she's not new. She's been at it for like 3.5 years at this point, but like she's pretty new to be getting this type of, tribalism on her side, like don't diss Toyota. Like that's wild, 'cause it's like, I don't know, that's just I think Manami Toyota watching her in 1990 in general is just sort of jarring to me, even though it's like it's not, 'cause I've been watching her in 1990 for the past like months now, but it's just like these people really like her, and it's like She isn't as good. She isn't even as good as she eventually gets. And these people are obsessed with her. It makes sense why she had the pressure to be so fucking good eventually, because it's like if she just plateaued, I don't think that a lot of things would have happened, because she was getting built up so much by, the crowd and by, the wins that she's getting, or, in this case, time limit draw against a very, very big deal of a wrestler. Like, it's just kind of insane to me. I don't know, I'm at a loss for words right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think as somebody who watched a lot of this unfold, I think her match style is different than a lot of the other women. And it's very much this like, it's built around big near falls and exciting matches and dramatic matches. I think if you look at the culture at the time, like nobody was having matches like she was. So I can kind of understand them getting behind her as the best wrestler, maybe on the roster. And that's kind of what happened. A lot of her matches around this time were very much, we're just gonna throw bombs, we're gonna kick out of a lot of shit, gonna go to a draw, it's gonna be really cool, and the crowds just eat it up, to be honest. So I think maybe her popularity comes from that, in that she was such a good wrestler that she got over.
That's very true. I was about to make a Okada joke that I would have gotten a lot of heat for the Joshi community. So
Please
I'm
do
just
it,
gonna,
please, please do it, please.
because I
You
was
can
gonna say,
edit it
oh,
out, like.
just like how Okada, everybody loves Okada because he's the greatest wrestler of all time, right? Like, no, but
I'm gonna quit
that's
now
not
after
you of our
I'm
beliefs.
leaving. I'm done.
Yeah, that's not you of our
Bye.
beliefs. Please don't clip that. Because it was a joke, please. I've been canceled enough for my wrestler opinions, okay? I don't need any more.
I saw that like on Twitter. You were like, "Oh, I'm canceled now," and I was like, "I kind of want to know why, because it could be a few things, but
It's
I
because
didn't want to ask."
it could be a few things that makes me sound like I'm like the worst, but no, it's because I said that Sonata gets the same hate that Saki gets, and neither of them deserve it. So I was like, they're
Saki Kashima or
Shima.
I mean, I don't know. Do people hate Sonata because he used to be really good and isn't anymore? Because I mean, Saki Kashima in like 2012 was killer, but now she isn't as killer.
That's part of it. And also, I feel like, and we're going on a bunch of tangents on this, but I don't really. I feel like they can both be put in a better position. But they aren't, and people like I don't think Sonata should be wrestling Okada every single fucking month. 'Cause why? Just like I feel like Saki should be a high speed wrestler, because I feel like Saki has done amazing in the four high speed matches that she's had. So I think that's where she should be. But instead, she's high enough on the card, but she gets beat. And it's just like she's in a really weird spot, and she's not that great, but she is really good. And I said this to a lot of people who don't like Sonata, so that was most of it.
Oh, I see.
So, they saw it as a slight on Saki, and I'm just like, no, I'm just saying. And yeah, I got canceled for it,
That's fair. I think you deserve
but
that.
thanks, bud. Okay. You'll see how it is. But Clash of 85 goes undefeated. Even though it was a draw, they go undefeated. And you love to see it. Clash of 85 goes hard. Shout out Yumika Hoda, shout out Suzuka Minami, shout out Mitsuko Nishiwake, and shout out Akira Hokuto. They are some of the GOATs, because Clash of 87 is pretty dope. And 86.
There are a few like notable classes like
Yeah, but still, 85 is my favorite, because Hoda and Hokuto are fucking Hokuto Hoda. Like it doesn't really, like, except
you
for
don't really need to explain it, like everybody who
exactly.
knows, we get it.
Yeah, exactly. But we're main event time. Let's go, boys. It's Jungle Jack versus Bull Nakano and the Grizzly One, Grizzly Uemura. Very famous match, very good match. The most famous part of this match is probably the kendo stick spot, which I'm pretty sure everybody has seen.
That annoys me so much because they cut off the best part, which is Bull just yanking the stick off of Bison and breaking it off of Aja. I'm like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Why isn't this in the GIFs? Like,
I know.
what are they
And
doing wrong?
like honestly, like that was like the least intense part of the match, which is insane.
Yeah, definitely. This was crazy.
'Cause like I don't know, like part it probably was even more like intense and brutal for me because like I still am sort of holding on to like I miss Gokumonto. I want to see Grizzly and Bison together, but then it's like they just are genuinely trying to murder each other. I'm just like, this is sad, but you know, it's wrestling. So like it starts with Bull and Bison going at it, and Aja and Grizzly going at it. Aja and Grizzly are just sort of, you know, going on at it like a normal Gokumonto match. Whereas Bull and Bison, they are trying to murder each other. Like I'm convinced that like I feel like there was some deep-seated heat amongst them. Because if there wasn't, then they are just sadistic motherfuckers that can just like that. Like I don't know. Like they were, you know, like there was biting, there was unprotected headshots with chairs, there was fucking, you know, gushes on the fucking on the forehead in the first 2.5 minutes of the match, and it was all from Bison and Bull, and I'm just like, holy sh! Like, what? Like, I feel like this is like real, bro. Like, it just felt very, very like raw. And it kind of creeped me out, but then once I got into it, I was into it and I was ready. Then Grizzly eventually got busted open with, you know, both Aja and Bison biting her head very. I don't like was biting always a thing for Gokumonto? Because I feel like they just started biting everybody just like in this match, like so fucking much.
Yeah, it feels like they decided to take Dump's thing, but instead of using a fork, they're just like, we're just gonna bite people, you know? Because I
Yeah.
mean, Dump used to like dig the fork into their head so they'd bleed, but they were just like, nah, forks are not sanitary at all. We're just gonna bite you.
We believe in sanitation here in Gokumon. That's why we will bite you instead of stab you, which is, you know, it's the way to be, guys. It's the way to be. Bite, don't. Great advice. Yeah, and like they just did it so much that at one point I was putting my notes like these women really do be biting each other for like 5 minutes at a time. Like it's still going, like it's just still happening. That was an integral part of like seriously, it was an integral part of the match was that they were just biting the shit out of each other. And then eventually Grizzly gets out the kendo stick and she starts beating Bison with it. And again, the Outsiders, which is, you know, Grizzly and Bison, they are one of my favorite tag teams at this point. You know, like I just really enjoy them as a duo. I think that they always come second fiddle to like in history to Aja and Bull. So it's like I always like have a like little soft spot for the underdogs. Plus they're just really fucking good. So seeing Grizzly just beat the shit out of her with a kendo stick, it was like, damn, so this is really over. they ain't coming back from this as a tag team. And then Bison gets a nightstick out, starts beating Grizzly with it, and I was like, oh, they really aren't going back. And then Aja gets another kendo stick, and there's a lot of sticks in the ring. There's like four. Oh, and there was a tin can at one point, you know, Aja's gimmick.
Lovely tin can that would evolve to the bin.
Yeah, while I was watching the match, I was trying to come up with like a good tin can pun I could say on the show, but I couldn't think. Like I'm not.
Really let me down here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Alex, but
You should be.
if you can't beat Bull, a tin can didn't. Shh, there.
Ah, Jesus. God.
Oh, this podcast is gonna die a real hard death.
You just get a DM tomorrow, like, man, I can't do this anymore. I quit.
Like fucking, you know, all of the supporters, fucking Cheese, shout out Cheese, I love you, buddy. Like he's just gonna be like, yeah, you know, I don't know, I can't do this anymore. Like, you know, it was good up to a point, but I think it's over. But yeah.
One.
But yeah, so they do the double kendo stick spot, and then they do the better spot where Bull just starts beating the shit out of Aja. And throughout this entire match, I'm gonna be quite honest, I feel like Bison was the MVP of it. Like, I know that was that the whole match was like meant to build Bull and Aja, and I think the Bull and Aja bits were really good. Like, they were magical. You know, like they felt like, ooh, this is like very special, and this feels really like important. But I feel like from a wrestling standpoint and from a match standpoint, Bison was just fucking on her shit, and I loved it. I think Bison versus Bull would have been a money match, even though they ended up going very heavily with Aja versus Bull. I feel like Bison versus Bull could have been just as good, and I know that's a slight on your favorite wrestler of all time. I'm sorry, but I just feel like that would have been
No,
crazy.
it's fair to be honest, because I think during this feud, Bison is at her best. Like she was fantastic during this feud, to the point that when she retires, I was very sad to see her go. The stuff with Aja and Bull was weirdly like psychological. I felt like whenever Grizzly was in trouble, Bull was just like, right, fuck out of here, I'm gonna beat these two up. Aja wasn't able to help Bison, and you could tell that was really getting to her. She was just screaming at various points trying to get Bull off of her. And, like, it
Yeah.
was just this weird psychological thing of Aja, she's not there yet, but she really started to unleash that monster as the match went on. So I thought that was a really interesting kind of thread to the match. I'm not sure if you picked up on that or.
I could definitely see it, 'cause it did feel like Aja and Bison were very like just close as wrestlers. And it's like obviously they're Jungle Jack, so it's like we know that they're a tag team, but it's like it felt like they had emotion, and it doesn't feel like that in wrestling sometimes. You know, it feels like they're just, beating people up, and like heels don't have emotion as much as they probably should. So it did it I can see what you mean. I didn't pick up in as much, just because I was just watching in disbelief as they were murdering each other. But
Fair.
yeah, I can definitely see what you're talking about, because And Grizzly and Bull definitely had a certain relationship too, where it's like at the very beginning, like nobody started like hitting each other until, Bison started pushing, and then because for clarification, it started like where all four of them were in the center, Bull was staring at Aja, and Grizzly was staring at Bison. And basically, like, they just sort of like switched, because it's like, hey, don't push my partner. And then they like all switched to the like diagonal opponent. So it's like it did feel like, despite the fact that these four used to be like a team, so it's like it's sort of sad that these aren't they're splitting. It did feel like they were trying to salvage that. It's like, no, they're still teams. It's just that they aren't a team four anymore. You know, like it's they still felt
Yeah.
like there was a connection, and it wasn't just them being kind of, like, oh, we're teaming up today.
Yeah,
The
and I
match.
think if I may like jump in, I think that speaks to the weakness maybe of the bond with Gokumon Toh, because it always felt like they were just together because they were all with Dump, and not really that like Bull wanted them or they wanted to be with Bull. It was always just kind of, well, Dump's gone, so like Bull's the leader now.
Yeah. And I was gonna say that that's like, I'm not really sure why Gokumon Toh just like because like last month, the Outsiders were teaming together. I mean, Aja was in Bull's corner, and I was just like, okay. And then next month, they all are trying to murder each other. So, but then you think about it, and it's like it wouldn't take a lot to break the quote unquote bond of Gokumon Toh, because like certain members had a bond. Like I feel like Grizzly and Bison had a bit more of a bond than this lets up. Like I feel like it was just broken in a heartbeat, because one of them had to go with Bull, one of them had to go with Aja. But other than that, like it sort of makes sense that it's like Bull and Aja, it's like, hey, fuck you, no, fuck you, and then it's a fucking explosion. Like that makes sense, and I agree with what you mean that it's like Gokumon Toh wasn't very, like togetherness as much as they were like all they were of the same philosophy because of Dump. And it wasn't that they were all teammates as much as they all believed the same thing. And so it was Bull that was like, hey, I've been here the longest. If you believe this, if you agree with this, if this is how you do things, then you're my subject, basically. And that was just sort of how it was. And I could definitely see why it's split. I'm still sad that it's split because I love Gokumonto. But you know, it is what it is. Bison pinned Grizzly, by the way, with a German suplex, because I didn't mention it. I just saw her. But yeah, so she pinned Grizzly. They were both bleeding heavily out of their heads, and it was quite interesting. Kong and Nakano just start beating each other up after the match too. And then Aja cries a lot at this point, which is like, it's not weird, but it's just like sort of like, again, it's jarring because like in a year it's like she'll be the most stone cold motherfucker in the company, you know, like but at this point, this is like the third match that she's cried. And it's like, that nothing against her crying, like she can cry, like, you know, I it's just weird to know that Aja Kong has tears, like, you know, like, you know, like that. It's just like, it's a weird thing to witness, but you know, like you say, it's not the same Aja Kong that eventually becomes Aja Kong.
Yeah, I mean, I find it interesting to like see her growth more than anything. Like, as you said, she goes on to be a stone cold killer. So I think it's interesting to see her now. Like, she's younger, she's newer, she kind of has emotions, but to be champion, she kind of has to kill those off and just go in and just try and kill people. So and she still hasn't learned that yet. So I think it's interesting to see that growth.
Yeah, that's true. How do you feel about her getting into the main event picture so quickly? Because I mean, it's not like quickly, but it's pretty quickly, considering the scenario. Because like we say, it's like, they lost the Crush Girls, and after that, they sort of scrambled for a long time, maybe not a long time, for like a year, and they picked, okay, well, we're gonna have Aja go all out, and it's like, I'm fine with it because I'm excited for the cage matches. I'm excited for, you know, Jungle Jack with Tag Gold eventually. But you know, like, it unbiased as a journalist, Alex, how do you feel about Kong getting thrust into this role? Not saying that she didn't deserve it, but just like, it's a weird scenario when you look at the first match that she had this year and this match. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean I can understand why they did it. She certainly has a presence and an ability. But I think maybe they weren't expecting her to get as big as she was, because it seemed for a while, and I know I'm jumping, but it seemed for a while like Kyoko in a way was kind of like their girl, and then they just kind of went with Aja. So I think like I can understand why they went, okay, we're gonna push you because you know Bull's gonna retire in 2 years and we'll need a new big monster heel. So like that kind of makes sense to me, but then I don't think they ever maybe intended on having her be as big as she did. I don't know if you kind of would agree with that or if I'm talking shit here, but.
No, I can definitely get it. I think that it's very possible that Aja was just sort of like a, okay, we need her in case something happens to Bull, like as an insurance policy almost. Not saying that she wasn't great on her own, not saying that she couldn't do it on her own, and she proved that she can 100% do it on her own, but that it was like sort of an insurance that's like, okay, we can't have Aja in Bull's shadow, but we need her in case something happens to Bull. So I think that the way that they executed that, and they are going to execute that as we move forward, is very smart. And I think I know what you mean. Like, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's like, you know, it's not entirely that it's like, oh, we're rocket strapping her and she's going to be the biggest thing of all time. But it's that, you know, she's useful and she can do it. You know, she can do what she can do, and then she sort of overperformed as time went on. And you mentioned Kyoko Inoue. I just wanted to say that I believe it's the first show that she had face paint on, because we didn't watch her match because it was like a prelim and it wasn't recorded. But in the main event, she was a second and she had her full face paint on. So, you know, we were just talking about last month that, you know, oh, Kyoko without face paint is fucking weird. Well, they listened to us 30 years in advance. And they got her some face paint. That, good job, AJW. I respect it. I respect it. You listen to the boys.
The boys, the experts.
The Joshi experts who compares the Nada to Saki Kishino.
No, hold on. Don't include me in that.
Oh yeah, sorry about that. But yeah, that was AJW Classics number 41, Survival Shout, Corican Hall. It was a very good show. I'll say that. Like, I know last month I was a negative Nancy, rightfully so, because the show sucked. But this show was very good. I think that, even though we only got four matches, I feel like all four matches delivered something to the show that was meaningful. Even the second match that wasn't like the end all be all of tag team matches, it was a really good tag team match. Martial arts match, again, probably one of the weaker martial arts matches, but because it has star power in it was fun to watch. Like the martial arts match that we watched the other time with Hasegawa versus I'm blanking on her name, but the six rounder that you were like, this is a long ass match. I thought that was really, really good because they both were a certain level and they both were really good at the kickboxing when they weren't getting eaten by Bat Yoshinaga. But I feel like they didn't have the star power that Mima Shimoda and Yumika Hoda did. So watching Yumika Hoda beat somebody up in a shoot, while it might not be pretty, it was pretty fun to watch. I'll say that. How did you feel about the show?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. When you had said, "Oh, we're just doing the one classic," I was kind of like, "Oh, yeah, this is going to be a short one." But then, like, the two matches gave us a lot to talk about, and they were very, there was a lot to analyze, and they're fun to talk about. Both are on my AJW Classic spreadsheet. I am a nerd and have spreadsheets for everything, so if anybody ever wants to say, "Oh, what AJW Classic matches should I watch?" I have a spreadsheet for that. And both of these matches are on there because they kick ass.
People hate spreadsheet guys.
Yeah, I'd see. I have an infatuation with spreadsheets because I did computers for a year and I really liked them because it was the only thing I could do well. So now I use them for everything.
Fair. That's fair. I respect that. But no, it's just like one of those things that's like, it's like, oh, you got to watch wrestling with a spreadsheet. It's like, no, just like being an analytical. Don't be an asshole. But yeah.
See, I write articles all the time about like top 10 matches of the month or like the matches of the year, so I kind of have to keep a record of them somewhere.
That's fair. Yeah, I personally don't keep a spreadsheet, but I think that, both of these, I keep the, percentage, and both of the main event matches got over 80%, which is pretty good considering that the highest that we've had so far for me has been 85. So, because like 100% is going to be the greatest match of all time, which I don't even, but so I'm very, very harsh with my ratings in that degree. So I'd say that this show was probably one of the better shows of the year because the other shows had their problems. You know what I mean? Like a, for every Bull Nakano versus My Name is Toyota, there is a Medusa versus Aja Khan. But for this show, I don't think there was any real weak points, and the weak point it had was still pretty damn good. So I think that that was pretty good. I think Survival Shout delivered very, very well. And I hope that we delivered to you very, very well, our faithful listeners who probably will never listen to us again after this. Yeah, man. This was a mess. Like, it was fun and I loved it, but this was a mess. But okay. Thank you for listening. Do you have anything else to add before I cut you off?
No, not really. No, I can't. I think we got it all out there.
Okay, good. If you want to cancel me on Twitter, you can go to at XXEQBen. Everybody loves to do it. It's a very good time yelling at me about my wrestling opinions. If you want to follow the podcast, if you want to ask us questions on the podcast, which as you can tell by this wonderful hour of talking about nonsensical shit, that we are experts on this subject, you can go to at VTGpod on Twitter. Alex, shout out your Twitter, please.
Yeah, it's at LWOSPW, Alex Orr. It's probably just easier to search for my name. It's Neutra Alex, which is NEWTRALEX. You probably shouldn't follow me. My sense of humor doesn't really translate to text, so all of my tweets look really weird. But if you want to torture yourself, then go ahead.
He's not that bad. I mean, he's He's not that bad. Yeah, thank you for listening. If you've made it through this entire podcast, like, thank you. We love you a lot. And if you want, you can, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your dog, tell your grandma, tell your sister, tell your neighbor, tell your neighbor's dog to listen to the best in the biz about classic Joshi wrestling. Ijo. Jesus Christ, Alex. What the fuck was that show?